Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Exploring Buddhist Prayer, Taking Refuge by Lama Kathy Wesley. In this first in an occasional series on Buddhist prayer, Lama Kathy reviews a prayer we all know and love, the four-line refuge prayer. Attributed to the Indian master Atisha, this prayer sums up our motivation for Buddhist practice and invokes the idea that Buddhas are constantly present in our lives and care about who we are and what we are becoming. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Lama Kathy coming to you on behalf of the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Tibetan Buddhist Meditation Center for our 11:30 a.m. Sunday Dharma Talk. I am sorry to let you know that Tom Broadwater is not going to be giving the Dharma Talk today, but he will be giving it next week. He had to get new computer equipment, so he will be on next week. So I'm just really pleased to have the opportunity to be here with you today, especially seeing as this is a beautiful sunshiny day in Ohio, which is rare in February. Also, it's the day after we moved in to the Columbus KTC building. We had a big moving party yesterday, and about 30 individuals, thanks to all of you, got together under a watchful eye of John Bova and Chuck Drake, two of our board members, and Bethany Dwinell, and Tracy Whalen Payne. All sorts of people came to the KTC and did a lot of loading and unloading of stuff from our storage space. So my gosh, it's becoming a real place now. So in any case, it's kind of an uplifting day as we get ready to start training our volunteers, which is what's going to happen in the first couple of weeks of March. And you can watch our Facebook page and our website for more information about tours that we'll be giving of the building before our opening. So, okay, so that's handling all the news. Let's get started on our topic for today. I hope all of you are well and that you've been feeling good in your life and having good practice also. I'm going to say a short prayer, and you will recognize it because it's going to be the topic of our talk today. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. Okay. Let's see. I'm pretty excited about the topic because the last time I talked about Buddhist prayer was a while back, and this new iteration will be about specific Buddhist prayers. Now, I'm not going to give a talk on Buddhist prayer every time. I'm just going to pepper them throughout the year. But I wanted to make sure that we covered some of the topics that we covered back in the old series. So I think we'll start by asking the question, what is Buddhist prayer? So what is Buddhist prayer? This is a question that I asked my own teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, a number of years ago. Because I asked him in the context of a question, I said, what's the difference from your point of view, what's the difference between Buddhist prayer and other forms of prayer and from that other religions practice? And he said, well, he says, I'm not 100% sure that I understand the prayers of other traditions and other faiths. He said, but I'm going to try. He said, my understanding is that in other faith traditions, we're praying to a supreme being who has power over everything and can do anything. And we're asking this person, who is a person we cannot become like, and who has never been like us. We can't be like and never been like us. We're asking them for requests. We're making requests of them of things that they can give us. And he said, whereas he says in Buddhist prayer, we are asking a being who was once just like us and now wants nothing more than for us to become like them. And we're asking them for the blessings that we can receive from them. And we ask for them to help us attain that enlightenment that they possess. So if I were to take apart this answer and to try to look inside the answer and tell you what I think was Rinpoche was trying to say was that the Buddha was once a human being just like us, and he became an awakened being. And this is true of all of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to whom we address our prayers, whether the Bodhisattva is Chenrezig, Tara, Manjushri, Medicine Buddha, or whatever, you know, whichever of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas we address in prayer, we're praying to someone who was just like us at one point and who we can become like in the future. And we're asking them not to grant us a changing of reality. We're not asking them to change reality for us. Rather, we are making the aspiration that we become like them. And we are praising their qualities and praying to them and asking for their blessings, which really consist of a ripening of all of our positive potential, our positive karma, our positive Buddha potential. We're making a request through the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that they grant us their blessing, that we can achieve enlightenment just as they have done. And so Buddhist prayer in that way, there are several kinds of Buddhist prayer. The most well-known is aspiration prayers. And aspiration prayers, the aspirational prayers are prayers that we say thinking that we are in the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. We pray to them and we ask for their presence, and we then make offerings to them of all that appears and exists, all that arises in our mind. We make offerings of those to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And we then aspire to become like they are. We aspire to become fully compassionate, fully wise, and capable of benefiting others. And so that is a little bit about aspiration prayer. But there's also prayers in which we supplicate the Buddhas and ask for specific things, such as health and well-being and so on. And when we ask for these things, we have to remember that we ourselves form the cause for our future experiences through the process of karma. So, for example, there's a story told about a practitioner of Dharma who supplicated the Bodhisattva of wealth and asked, oh, will you make me wealthy? I would like to supplicate the Bodhisattva of wealth, and please make me wealthy. Well, after many years had passed, the supplicator did not become wealthy. And as he was supplicating one day, the Bodhisattva of wealth, Namse, appeared to him. And he said, boy, have I got a complaint for you. I've been praying to you for many years, but you've never made me wealthy. And as the story goes, the Bodhisattva of wealth said, well, because I'm a Bodhisattva on the paths, the stages and the paths of awakening, I can read all of your past lives, and I can see that in none of your past lives were you ever generous to anyone. So because you haven't created the cause for wealth, I can't do much to help you. So when we are supplicating, asking for specific things from the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the ultimate thing we are asking for is their help and their blessing as we seek enlightenment. That's the ultimate kind of supplication that we're making. But if we ask them for health or wealth or well-being or resources or safety, we have to have in a previous lifetime accumulated the cause for that to ripen. And therefore, our prayers speed up the ripening of our positive karma and can help us purify our negative karma to eliminate our obstacles and obscurations. So that is a little bit about what prayer is. Now, I do want to make sure, by the way, I will be answering questions at the conclusion of this talk. So if you have some questions now, you can type them into chat and I'll get to them during my question break. I wanted to make sure that I mentioned that. So now this is an idea about what Buddhist prayer is. The object of our prayer is the first thing that is different in Buddhist prayer, and that is we're supplicating a being who was once like us and who wants nothing more than for us to become like them. And then in terms of of what we are requesting, what type of thing are we requesting in Buddhist prayer? We're requesting things that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have the capacity to give us, which is inspiration, blessing, and to purify negativity and to accomplish our enlightenment. And then lastly, what can the Buddhas actually give? Well, this reminds me of an age-old question, and that is, what is enlightenment exactly? If we believe that enlightenment is a state of power and capability, meaning that a person who has become enlightened really has complete wisdom, really has complete compassion, really has the power to appear in front of beings and to assist beings and to guide beings, if we really believe that enlightenment is a state of accomplishment, it's a dynamic state of power, accomplishment, and ability, if we think that Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have great power and ability, well, then we believe that they can and do sometimes intervene in our life in ways in which we may not recognize them. The Buddhas and Bodhisattvas can't change reality, but what they can do is they can help us through the ripening of our positive karma and through the accomplishment of the purification of our negative karma. And so what can they really do? They can actually show up in our lives. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche was famous for saying, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are real. And when you call upon them, they're actually present with you. And that if you ask them to stay with you, they will stay with you. And so Buddhist prayer, therefore, allows us to cultivate a sense of the presence of the Buddhas, a sense of the presence of the Bodhisattvas, a sense of their capacity for blessing us and the capacity that we have to receive that blessing. I remember the previous Kala Rinpoche, when he was talking about Buddhist prayer, he said the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, he compared them in a metaphor, he said they're like the radio tower on the hillside. That is, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are always present, being in a state of complete wisdom and compassion. I guess you could say they're sort of broadcasting complete wisdom and compassion 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And if we have the receiving set with the dials and we can dial up their frequency, then we can actually receive their transmission. And I love the radio analogy. I thought it was really a very clever analogy. And it's actually really true, because think about it. We have Buddha nature, right? We have Buddha nature. And the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to whom we pray have Buddha nature. And so there's a resonance between their Buddha nature and our Buddha nature that comes forward for us when we pray to them. There's a famous prayer in the mind training tradition that in which one addresses one's teacher and says, I pray to you, my guru, great and completely worthy spiritual friend, I pray that you will cause love, compassion, and bodhicitta to arise in my mind. Now, of course, we can think that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are causing love, compassion, and bodhicitta to arise in our mind because they have the capability to influence us. But we can also say that we ourselves have caused our love, compassion, and bodhicitta to arise in our mind because we've thought of it. We've consciously considered it. And so in this way, Kala Rinpoche said, the Buddha's blessings are like a hook, and the students and disciples' devotion is like a ring. And when the hook meets the ring, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas can lead us, he said, from happiness to happiness and then to awakening. So Buddhist prayer has a lot to offer. And there are so many kinds of Buddhist prayer. The one I'm going to be talking about today is the prayer of refuge. So the prayer of refuge is the one that I just talked about. The refuge prayer that we use today was written by the great master. It's attributed to the great master Atisha Dipankara, who was an Indian master who lived from 982 to 1055. He, at a very young age, he began having visions of the Bodhisattva Tara, who influenced him in all of his major decisions in life. She influenced him to ordain as a monastic. She influenced him to study the Dharma. She also influenced him to make a sea voyage to Sumatra, to the island of Sumatra in Indonesia, where he met a remarkable guru whose name was Suvarnadvipa. We know him in Tibetan Buddhism as the Dharmakirti of Sumatra, or Serlengpa. And Atisha studied mind training with this Sumatran teacher who we know in Tibetan as Serlengpa. He studied with him for 12 years. And what did he study? He studied what we now know as Lojong, or mind training, the practice of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity, and the practice of developing the Bodhisattva's mind of wishing to set aside one's own clinging and fixation and to take on the business of benefiting beings. If you remember from our earlier discussions of the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha said the suffering in our life is caused by attachment, clinging, fixation, and that of all the things we are attached to and cling to and that make us suffer, the thing we are attached to the most is our sense of self, me or I. And so how can we overcome selfishness? How can we overcome the clinging to me and I? Well, according to the teachings of the Buddha, love and compassion are a powerful tool that we can use to overcome our own selfishness. And that is the subject of mind training. Well, after Atisha returned to India, after having spent 12 years of his life in Sumatra studying with Serlengpa, he was invited in a series of invitations from the King of Tibet. And the King of Tibet invited Atisha to come and live in Tibet. And originally, he told his monastery he was only going for 3 years to Tibet, but he ended up spending the remainder of his life in Tibet. Some people say that was 12 years. Some people say it was 17 years. But whichever of these it was, he was renowned as the refuge lama. And sometimes even people who didn't know his name just called him the refuge lama because his main practice and his main teaching was about taking refuge and engendering the bodhisattva motivation. So let's talk about this prayer that is now attributed to him, the prayer of taking refuge. First, I'm going to say a couple of things about refuge itself. Refuge is sometimes called a statement of direction. His Eminence Taisi Drupache said that when we take refuge in the Buddha as our teacher, the Dharma as our path, and the Sangha as our community, the Buddha, teacher, Dharma, path, Sangha, community, he said, we're stating our direction. We're saying destination Buddhahood. We're saying we will become Buddhas, and that this is our statement. This is why we are doing our Dharma practice. And Sitra Rinpoche explained that this is refuge as a statement of direction. He said, this is why all Buddhist practices begin with a statement of taking refuge, to ensure that everything that follows that statement is helping us on the path toward awakening. And so that is, that's the function of the refuge prayer, is to state our direction and to get us started on the path. So the first line of the prayer goes like this. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent. And the second line is, I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. So here we have it. We have the Buddha, who's the awakened one, who actually overcame the sufferings of samsara and became our teacher. His teachings, which, because the Buddha is no longer with us physically, his teachings are his regent, I guess you could say. His teaching, it remains behind and is our guide. And the order of practitioners, of Buddhist practitioners, the Sangha, are the community who are our guides and our companions on the path to enlightenment. So that's the first statement of the first line of the prayer. The second line of the prayer goes like this. I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Refuge means that we look to the Buddha. We look to the Buddha as our protector. The Buddha said that samsara was a world of pain and suffering, and that in this world of pain and suffering, we need a refuge. We need someone who can calm our suffering while we are trying to develop the enlightened mind, and while we are trying to develop enlightened qualities, and while we are trying to attain freedom from samsara. And so we need a refuge. We need someone, something we can rely upon to help us with the sufferings, to assuage the sufferings of samsara. And so so this is what refuge means to us, is that we are attempting our best to do our best to attain enlightenment. Then the next line is, through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. What's happening in this verse is that we're taking refuge until enlightenment is reached, not just till the end of this life, not just until next week, but we are taking refuge from now until we actually reach Buddhahood ourselves and become what we have aspired to be, and become like those beings who wanted us to become like them. So until we reach the goal, we are taking refuge, however many lifetimes it takes. And how are we going to make this path? We're going to take this path through the merit of generosity and other good deeds. In Tibetan, it's jin, J-I-N, tsok, T-S-O-K, in transliteration. Jin is generosity, and tsok literally means etc. And so this is the practice of the bodhisattva, the six perfect virtues: generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. The six perfect virtues are generosity and other good deeds. And then that takes us to the final line of the prayer. May we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. And so this is the prayer that we are repeating when we say the prayer of taking refuge. So there are two kinds of refuge. There's the relative refuge and the ultimate refuge. And we begin with the relative refuge. The relative refuge is the Buddha, and he's really our main source. If we have to brief all three of the jewels of refuge into one, that would be the Buddha. He's here appearing in this world with us. He appears with us here. He inspires us through his 12 deeds of awakening. He inspires us through all the teachings that he's given us and all of the Dharma of his that remains active in the world. And he remains with us through the Sangha, through our awakened fellow practitioners and our guides, the Dharma preceptors and so on. So through this relative refuge, we begin our path and we take this relative refuge as our refuge until enlightenment is reached. There is also a second style of refuge. We can call it the ultimate refuge. The ultimate refuge is the mind, the nature of our mind itself. The ultimate refuge is our own Buddha nature. But right now, our own Buddha nature just remains as an idea for us. We haven't truly cultivated an understanding of it. We haven't truly cultivated a sense of the presence of our own Buddha nature. Right now, we're sort of confused by the many thoughts that spin around in our mind all the time. And because we're so busy with these thoughts that keep spinning around in our mind all the time, we can't recognize our Buddha nature. We can't see our basic goodness. We can't see our basic compassion and wisdom. And so as a result, we cannot take the nature of our own mind as our ultimate refuge just now. But this was a statement of the previous Kala Rinpoche, who, when he was giving his teaching on the taking of refuge, he said, that right now we can't necessarily trust our inner nature because we haven't learned how to develop it. He said, but once it is completely uncovered and revealed, he said, that is for us the ultimate source of refuge. And how do we take it? The refuge vow? What's the best way to take the refuge vow? Well, the best way, according to my teacher, Kenpo Carter Rinpoche, is to not just recite the words. He said, we have been saying the refuge prayer since the day we took refuge, because that's part of the daily practice of a person who has taken refuge, is a renewal of the vow morning and evening. And so he said that as Buddhists, we get to know this prayer very well, and we recite it kind of by rote. We don't really think about what we're saying after we've gotten it memorized. And so he suggested to a group of us once, he was suggesting that before we rattle off the refuge formula, the words of taking refuge, that we think about them, that we think about their meaning, we think about the consequence of them. And then after we have contemplated for a few moments these thoughts, these ideas, then we can recite the words. So let me give you a brief description of how we could approach this teaching. Rinpoche said you can start by feeling the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So that means when you sit in your shrine area or you sit in your meditation seat, wherever it may be, you don't just open your prayer book and start speaking. You sit for a moment and you think about the Buddha. You think about the Dharma. You think about the Sangha. You think about all the enlightened ones. And that you imagine that in the sky in front of you, all of them are present. Now, people have told me that visualization is difficult for them. And Kempo Karth Rinpoche also received questions like this. And he said, it's okay if you can't see the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, even in your mind's eye. He says, it's okay if you can't see them, as long as you can cultivate the sense that you are in their presence and how it would feel. All of us who have ever been in the presence of great awakened beings, like His Holiness Dalai Lama, His Holiness Karmapa, all of the great masters with whom we have studied. If we think about how it felt to be in the presence of those teachers, thinking about all of their qualities, their wisdom, their compassion, their completely, thoroughly being processed by Dharma, the fact that that compassion and love comes from their very form, and that we feel accepted, seen, and known. If you can just spend a moment thinking about that, feeling the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, knowing that they want for us what they have, which is awakening, and developing the wish ourselves to achieve that awakening. That's a good way to begin. But that's only the first stage of preparing to recite the refuge. We can also feel the presence of all sentient beings around us. We can think that our mother of this life is on our left, our father of this life is on our right, and that all beings of all stages and types of existence, animals, birds, insects, beings we can't see, if we just imagine this crowd of enormous crowd of beings around us, that's a second way to feel present. We feel the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in front of us. We feel the presence of all sentient beings around us. And we think that we will ourselves lead all sentient beings in praying to and taking refuge in the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And how this, how what we think of next is we think next, we recognize the suffering of beings, and we know the need. We know the need that we have to be protected from the sufferings of samsara. So knowing this need and feeling this need, and we begin to recognize that we ourselves need to take refuge. And so that's what we think next, knowing the need of taking refuge. And in addition, knowing the benefits of taking refuge. Knowing the benefits of taking refuge, knowing that it will protect us from the suffering of samsara, it will protect us from the fear of samsara. So knowing the need for refuge, knowing the benefit of refuge, and feeling all of these things, that is when we can recite the prayer. And I think that this would be a great opportunity for us at this moment to think about this. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. After reciting the refuge prayer, we can imagine that light comes from the form of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, blessing us and removing our suffering. And then the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas dissolve into us and bless our stream of being. Practicing refuge in this way, where we think about the need for taking refuge, we think about the benefits of taking refuge, and we think about the sources of refuge and so on. It's a marvelous way to deepen our practice of taking refuge. And so I hope that that little exercise in taking refuge was helpful to you and that you can use it on a daily basis. But I have one more topic to address, and that is the refuge of daily life. The refuge of daily life. Once we have really felt the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, really felt the presence of sentient beings, understood the meaning of taking refuge, the need for it, and then the benefits of it, and said the words and received the blessing, after that, we have to get up from our meditation seat and walk around in our everyday life. So how do we take refuge with us? According to the teachings of Kempo Carter Rinpoche, he says, the more you think about the three jewels and their presence in your life, the more you feel their presence, invoke their presence, and think about them, he said, the greater their influence will grow in you. And this really stands to reason, because the way our daily karma is accumulated is by repeating things over and over again. I make a joke sometimes that one definition of karma is what you do a lot, you do a lot. And so when we take refuge in the morning and the evening, we can easily feel the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. But then when we go wandering around in our everyday samsaric life, we might forget about the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. We might forget about their presence in our lives. And so as a result, it's good to refresh the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in our lives. And there are lots of ways to do this. Kempo Carter Rinpoche said, one of the easiest ways to keep the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in our mind all the time is to make offerings. He said, when you're impressed by anything, like right now, we have a beautiful blue sky outside. It's for those of you who have studied Mahamudra, it's Vajradhara blue. It's a beautiful color of blue. And we can offer that beautiful blue sky to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for the benefit of all suffering beings. So offering anything that we obtain, any new gift that we receive, even if that new gift is something you ordered online and forgot what you ordered until the box arrived and you had a sudden surprise. Oh, look, it's Christmas. So you mentally offer any new thing that you receive. You mentally offer it to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas for the benefit of beings. And then Kempo Carter Rinpoche says, you imagine they give it back to you for your own use. So offering is one way of remembering the presence of a Buddha or Bodhisattva, the Buddhas or Bodhisattvas. And another thing that can bring them to mind is fear and danger. I know it's not a good thing to feel fear, and it's not a good thing to feel danger, but when you do, it's a great opportunity to remind yourself of the presence of the Buddha. One of my teachers taught me that whenever I was frightened, I should imagine that either my guru or the Buddha or whatever bodhisattva that I'm practicing is present above my head. He said that the practice of transference of consciousness at the time of death, or poa, is a very complex practice, but if we think of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as being present above our head, he said that is a kind of instant emergency poa. And so he said, remembering the presence of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in the midst of danger is a good way to refresh your refuge, even if you're mildly scared by something, if somebody surprises you or whatever, if you can imagine that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are present with you, this is another way to remember the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. But there's one more, and it's one of my favorites, and it's the question, asking myself the question, where is my refuge? This is what happens. This kind of refuge comes up when we find ourselves taking refuge in somebody else's opinion, or we find ourselves taking refuge in what other people think of us, rather than taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, who can lead us out of samsara. In other words, when we become disturbed or upset by things that other people say to us, when we become disturbed and upset about what we perceive other people are doing to us, this is an opportunity to ask ourselves, what am I taking refuge in really? Because if we were really taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, what other people say to us, while being important, because after all, if they're telling us we're doing something wrong, we need to actually admit that and start changing our ways. But the story of anger and upset comes about because we put more stock in what other people say about us than we do in our practice of Dharma and our faith and confidence in our Buddha nature, as exemplified by the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So I have a lot of friends in the 12-step recovery tradition, and they have their own phrases and sayings about this, one of which is, how important is it? And what this means is you're asking yourself, is this thing that I'm worried about or concerned about important enough for me to upset my serenity for? And so if we can find those things in us that cause us to place our refuge in others rather than in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, that's a good thing to keep in mind. So these are ways that you can deepen your practice of, these are ways that you can deepen your own practice of refuge. And I was hoping to be able to share with you this first among Buddhist prayers as part of a continuing series. As I say, I won't be talking about Buddhist prayer every time I talk from now on. I'm just going to pop one in and out from time to time, because I already, even giving this talk today, came up with two other ideas of things that I could speak to you about. For example, I'm really interested in this idea of working with others and working with the stories that we tell ourselves. So I'd be very interested to talk to you about those stories and how we are the hero of our own story and how that makes us actually less functional as bodhisattvas in training. But we'll get to that another time. So this is all I have to present to you today. I'm going to look at chat now and see if there's any questions. I'll go all the way to the top, and I'm not seeing any questions. I'm just seeing the notes that I made, and thank you for letting me pop my little notes in there. No, I don't see any questions for right now. So what we might do then is take a moment to meditate quietly for about a minute and a half, and then we can dedicate our merit. So we'll sit really quietly. I have my portable meditation gong, and we'll sit for about a minute and a half. Quietly allowing our mind to rest on the breath, our attention to rest on the breath. allowing the breath to come and go naturally, placing our attention on the breath. When our attention wanders, we gently bring it back to the breath. Okay, I'm really happy to have had this opportunity to spend some time with you today talking about refuge. And if you have questions that develop about this topic, you can feel free to put them in chat and I'll do my best to address them after the talk today. And I'm inviting you to return here on YouTube and on Facebook. Next week on Sunday, the 27th of February, when Lama Tham will be giving his Dharma talk. I'm looking forward to it. He's been talking about the songs of Milarepa, and I'm just really, really looking forward to his presentation on that. So thanks. I see some of you are checking in from, thanks very much, seeing you checking in from YouTube. So thanks very much. Okay, here we go. I'm going to dedicate the merit and gather together all the goodness that we have here and make the aspiration that all of this goodness is shared with everyone. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. All right. Thanks, everyone. And we'll be seeing you again soon. Om mani padme hum.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.